Hi, this is Mike Agronoff. I'm here with Rabbi Saul Solomon on Dave's Gone By on UMC Radio, and I'm glad to meet you.
Oh, shalom, damn it. This is your old pal, Rabbi Saul Solomon, who loves Judaism, who loves the theater, who loves culture and art, and especially music. Love even especially folk songs. People who would just get up there with a guitar or maybe an accordion or perhaps an ocarina and can stand there and cast a spell with just words and music. Someone who has been doing that for many, many years now and is still going strong is Mike Agronoff. He has been called by none other than Christine Lavin a genius. That is a quote. And he calls himself a song finder more than even a singer-songwriter. We'll ask him about that. But I want to let you know that he has a relatively new album out. It's called Straight Lines. And writing for a website called NoDepression.com, the critic wrote, quote, "I was not prepared for the depth and beauty of Agronoff's recent release. He has a deceivingly powerful and clear voice, and his finger-picking is skillful. It's delightful and contains subtle surprises. He has not only recorded, but flawlessly mixed and produced an album that deserves a place in any folk music lover's collection. Ladies and gentlemen, one of the reasons New Jersey is not quite so horrible as we think it is, please welcome to the neighborhood, Mike Agronoff. Shalom, Mike!
Oh, I think I'd better get myself one of those albums. It sounds pretty good.
There you go. It's called Straight Lines, by the way. You can get it at his website, mikeagronoff.com. And, of course, the first most important question is, are you Jewish?
I was born Jewish. I'm an atheist.
No, wait. Why did you lose faith in Hashem?
I don't think I ever had it.
What? Even as a three-year-old? Or did your parents bring you to shul?
No.
Oh, were they hippies?
We were a non-practicing Jewish family, and I seem to recall as a five-year-old mouthing some prayers and saying to myself, this is nonsense. I don't think we ought to get into this. It's really not pertinent to...
Wait. Judaism is pertinent to everything if you're talking to a rabbi, but let me ask you one question, though. You've lived... How old are you at this point?
I'm 70.
70 years old. You've lived, unfortunately, I'm sure, through tragedy, through terrible times. What does an atheist turn to get through the hard times?
Himself.
Is that enough? Does that work?
It has to. I don't have anything else.
Well, so...
I envy the people who do.
Aha. Do you meditate?
People who do, they have a comfort that I'll never have because I have as much faith that there isn't anything after as... you have that there is.
After or even during. I mean, let's not even talk about the reincarnation aspect, but just even day-to-day during, you have enough in yourself to get through, and probably friends and family too, no?
I don't have anything else. That's the only thing I can rely on.
Well, are you married? Do you have kids? I know you have a house in New Jersey somewhere.
I'm not married.
Ah, wow. Wow. I'm married with 21 and a half somewhat beautiful children, so I don't even know where you're coming from. Are you shacking up with someone?
No, but I have a long-term steady girlfriend, I've really never had any particular interest in having children, which is probably one of the reasons I'm not married.
Well, the music, the songs are your children. Do you feel that way?
I don't think that someone could have the same kind of love for his songs as he would for his children. Certainly there's so much more in another human being than in a song that is no comparison.
That's true. Humans are much, much more annoying than songs will ever be.
Yeah, and if I don't like a song, I can just get rid of it.
Exactly. So one of the reasons I'm asking all these personal questions is, oh, you have a bio on your website, mikeagronoff.com, but it doesn't really tell anything about your upbringing, about where you went to school, how you got into music. So tell us all this.
Well, I was born in New York City, and I went to Bronx High School of Science, and I went to Polytechnic Institute of Brooklyn, living at home when I was in school, and I was for all of my working years a mechanical engineer, and I loved my day job.
Oh, that's interesting. And being so nimble with your fingers, as it were, did that lead you naturally to picking on guitars and banjos and things? Everything I'm asking is no. I love this.
I mean, I had piano lessons as a kid, and the piano was too big to take to parties. So, being a child of the '60s, it was pretty natural that I'd pick up the acoustic guitar, and that seemed to suit me very nicely.
Do you remember the first folk songs that you practiced on when you were trying to impress girls at parties?
I think Suzanne was the first song I learned.
Leonard Cohen's Suzanne. Oh. Very nice.
Mitchell's song, Suzanne. That's who's his name.
No, Leonard Cohen.
Oh, yeah, Leonard Cohen's Suzanne.
Did it get you laid?
No.
Damn it.
No, it's the music has been distressingly unhelpful in that department.
No!
Yeah, but it's certainly the motivation.
Maybe you should have tried the flugelhorn. Much more phallic. Would have gotten you...
But less... romantic.
Well, what was the first coin? Me being Jewish, I'm interested in the money, of course. What's the first money you ever made as a performer?
I know, I don't remember if I got paid, but I do remember my very first actual
gig. Yeah.
Was at a place, and it was, I didn't pick up the guitar until my 20s. It was a Mama's Coffee House, which was run by a woman by the name of Carrie Estrin. When she was in high school, that was her high school. She was doing that while she was in high school. She's currently very active in the folk
scene
world,
such as it is.
Agent and a mentor and stuff like that. I mean, it's funny that. The person who gave me my first gig is still doing folk music.
No, McMazel, that's quite wonderful. Do you remember what was the gig?
It was at this Mama's Coffee House.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mama, was that in Jersey?
Yeah.
Wow. How long did you continue doing your day job? Did you retire at 60?
2011.
Oh, wow.
I was laid off, and I continued looking for engineering jobs, as I said, because I really did love the work so much for 3 years. But I was doing it with a very narrow focus on what I wanted to where I wanted to work, and the confluence of jobs that I liked and jobs that were willing to hire a 70-year-old engineer or almost 70-year-old engineer was nil. So essentially, about a year ago, I resigned myself to the fact that I'm retired.
But, thank God, I mean, even though you would like to be doing a certain kind of mechanical engineering, you are comfortable because you worked all those years to put some stuff away. You probably get social security.
Yeah, I'm financially very, very well set. I can continue losing money as a folk singer without too much stress.
Well, the nice thing about
the old gag about the folk singer that wins the lottery and they wins it's $10 million and they interview him and they say, so what are your plans? Well, I guess I'll keep singing my songs until that's gone too.
Well, there's a writer for Sing Out magazine, a guy named Roger Dietz, wrote a column.
Very well.
You know, well, he said that 25 years ago, and actually he's almost 30 now since that article came out, he said that he and you were both at a folk festival, and the light bulb dawned, and you both realized, well, you're not going to get famous from what you're doing. But the goal was longevity and becoming like grand old men of folk music. Do you feel that way?
In a way, I mean, it's my name is out there. I'm a lot of people have heard me. I'm also pretty active in the listservs, and I comment on things. So people know my name, and that's nice.
Well, it's a little confusing from your website, but do you run a folk club?
I don't run it. I am very active in it. There's an organization in New Jersey called the Folk Project that has run a concert series currently called the Minstrel Acoustic Concert Series, just celebrated its 40th anniversary, and I book that concert series.
Oh, you book? I see. Well, because I was going to say, if you go to Mike Agranoff's website, there's a picture, or it might not.
Hey, we should spell that for the people, because it's not immediately obvious.
It's like Agra, like agribusiness, Noff, AGRANOFF. So there's only one O in there, Agranoff. MikeAgranoff.com.
I never thought of using the agribusiness as that. That's a nice little mnemonic.
Well, you know what we're calling this episode of the radio program? Agriculture. Get it?
Yes.
Oh, agribusiness you like. Agriculture is stupid?
That's even worse.
Thank you very much. I was going to say something nice here. I was going to push your show, by the way, that's going to be on January 23rd, which is, the birthday of the host and producer of this show, of Dave. But January 23rd, you can go to Seaford, Long Island, for what they call a home concert, a house concert. It's a private thing, but you can pay to get in. It's a very nice, intimate setting. And if people want to get tickets for this, it's at 8 o'clock on Saturday night. It's Songbox at optonline.net. Songbox at optonline.net for this concert in this. And they'll give you obviously the details and where to go and where to leave the blood sample before you come in. But let me. What I also wanted to say was, if you go to the website, you can see that 40th anniversary of the minstrel. I hate to call it the minstrel show. That gives a wrong idea. But yeah, Tom Paxton there.
Yep.
That's something. Tom Paxton was a guest on this radio show many years ago. What was he like? Did you have fun with him? What was he? Did you play with him?
I've known Tom not well, but enough so that we recognize each other and say hello for a good 20 years. He's a gentleman, and what I particularly like about him is that he continues to write, and his writing is not formulaic, and it is as good as the stuff that he wrote 40 years ago when he was at the top of the great folk scare of the 60s, 70s.
So I also have to ask, since you've been to so many folk festivals, you've probably rubbed elbows with others of the great generation folk-wise and other legends. So who are some? I know you...
I'll tell you a story about rubbing elbows with the famous...
Or other body parts.
There was a folk festival not far from here in northern New Jersey called the Waterloo Folk Festival that ran pretty much through the 80s. And it was a reasonably prestigious thing. They had all the great stars from the 60s and 70s for the evening concerts, and they had the local folks for their daytime activities. So I had backstage access because I was one of those local folks.
Yeah.
And I was sitting in the backstage area practicing the concertina. Arlo Guthrie walks up to me and says, "Well, I've always been interested in the concertina. Can you show me?" I says, "Well, sure, Mr. Guthrie." So,
of course.
Then I give Arlo Guthrie a concertina lesson. And somebody is there with it was Tom Waelke. I don't know how many people know him, but took a photo. And the next issue of Sing Out magazine comes out, and there is a picture of me and Arlo, right? So I figured that I'd take this into work and show people that there's some kind of credence to my nocturnal wanderings.
Well, actually, wait, you know, before you tell the rest of this story, you left out the first part of the story, because it's kind of a better story if you mention...
Let me finish the story and then tell your part.
Okay.
I saw you because you've come in right before the punchline, so I show this thing around. Three-quarters of the people there didn't know who Arlo Guthrie was. So it always helps me keep things in perspective about fame and reminds me of what a small fish in a small pond I am.
Well, that was the thing I wanted to mention before you got to the punchline, because on the website you tell the story. But what had happened earlier in the festival was you were feeling, pretty hot poop about yourself because somebody recognized you. Somebody pointed, hey, oh, look, you're Mike Agronoff. And you were like, people know me. You got the beard, you're pretty recognizable. But and then you met Arlo Guthrie, and with a concertina, then you come into work, you show the photograph, and they're like, who's Arlo Guthrie? So that was, it was kind of, you left off the beginning.
It's okay. Wasn't necessary.
One thing
when you're a storyteller, you know how to edit.
I wish I could learn that. God knows I wish I could learn it. Actually, the people from the Talmud should have learned it too. By the way, we're talking to Mike Agronoff here on Dave's Gone By. So your first instrument was the piano. The second was the guitar. Was third the banjo, or did you get into some other weird things before that?
I think I had a banjo before. Before I picked up the concertina, it was about the same time. The banjo I pretty much don't play anymore. The concertina I do, and it was a lovely find. It was a horrible instrument to learn, but it's become. I just like the sound of it. I like what it can do in the right circumstances for a song.
For people who don't know, a concertina is sort of like a squeeze box accordion thing.
It's a small accordion like instrument. There's a whole. It's in what's called the free reed family of instruments. Sounds kind of like this. And
ahoy there! Yes,
quite small. It's quite small, but in the right circumstances.
I know the Clancy brothers used to use it here and there, but
maybe play the closing track of Straight Lines, Diana Hanson, Parting Glass. You can do that one. Hi, this is Mike Agronoff. I'm here with Rabbi Saul Solomon on Dave's Gone By on UMC Radio, and I'm glad to meet you,
Mike Agronoff, with us in the neighborhood here, the folk singer-songwriter, but more of a song finder. Why don't you tell us a little bit why you prefer that distinction?
Well, because I've written a lot of stories. I've written parodies. I've edited some songs, but I haven't written a lot that I like because I book a concert series. I'm inundated with brilliant songwriters and brilliant songs, and my own writing seldom comes up to the level that I would expect of others, but I do run across songs that I find from good writers that are not well known, and I can help spread those around. Would you like to hear one?
I would love to.
Okay, this is by a friend of mine by the name of Pete Fishman, and it was...
Is he Jewish, by the way?
Probably about the same as me. It's called The Highway, and it was written about a little section of Massachusetts Route 2, just west of Cambridge, where he was living at the time. It's on the outside. It's about that road we travel back and forth to work every day that we never see. In a swamp along the highway, tall trees stand bare, stripped of bark, while overhead the heavens build their nests. The trees gray light, the nests frown dark. The birds all wheel away in summer. Each nest stands open to the weather. Till in the spring, when heaven flocks return to raise their families together. This is how the story goes. Now and then, if you listen, you can hear. We may meet again, who knows? turning of the year. We may meet again, who knows where or when, with the turning of the year. Fallow fields along the highway, corn stalks scattered on the dirt, last summer's bounty harvested and sold, the cold, cold ground remains inert. Till in spring, when the sun shines longer, the earth responds to warmer weather. The stalks decay, the plowman makes his way, mixing the stalks and soil together. This is how the story goes now and then. If you listen, you can hear. We may meet again, who knows where or when, with the turning of the year. We may meet again, who knows where or when, with the turning of the year. Cycle of seasons, tempest and time, effects of planetary motion around the sun. The bluest blue moon still tugs the tides around the ocean. Drivers all along the highway, mostly on their way to work, they're weaving in and out across the lanes, this one polite, that one a jerk. Most like me work in some building, completely cut off from the weather. And at day's end, we barrel round the bend, all homeward bound, alone, together. This is how the story goes now and then. If you listen, you can. We may meet again, who knows where or when, with the turning of the year. We may meet again, who knows where or when, with the turning of the
Absolutely lovely song there. From
the gem of a song.
Okay, who was the writer on that again?
Peter Fishman, F-I-S-C-H-M-A-N.
Peter Fishman with a song called The Highway, which you'll have to remind me, is that on the current CD?
No, that was on the one before, I believe, called Ain't Never Been Plugged.
As opposed to Unplugged, Ain't Never Been Plugged. And by the way, people can get that CD as well as Straight Lines, as well as your first CD going back a few years, all at your website. Is that correct?
Correct.
MikeAgranoff.com. AgranoffF.com. MikeAgranoff.com. And don't forget, if you want to hear that lovely guitar playing and singing and thoughtful song finding in person, you can do this if you're on Long Island on January 23rd, Saturday night, going to a home in Seaford. If you want the details.
Yeah, what it is, it's a home recording studio.
Ooh.
I haven't been there yet, but that's how he describes it. So the acoustics are great, and it's got a lovely little sound system there from what I'm told, and so I'm really looking forward to it.
Do you ever do any of those broadcast concert things like Christine Lavin does?
I'm about to in in 2 weeks, on the 17th of January, I'm going to be playing at the world, the historic Cafe Lena, one of the longest running folk concert series in the country. It's been operating since, I think, 1962 or something like that, in Saratoga Springs, and that is going to be simul-streamed over Concert Window.
Concert Window, that's the one, yes.
Yeah. And I'm going to be putting out a notification to everybody in my mailing list about that. Cafe Lena is an amazing place. It's a little bitty room, about 70 or 80 capacity, but the walls just are infused with history. I mean, Bob Dylan's played there. Everybody you could possibly imagine has played there.
Okay, I have to ask you, have you ever met Bob Dylan?
I have never met Bob Dylan.
Okay, you ever met Pete Seeger?
Yes.
And?
Pete Seeger's story.
Oh, good.
I was in sometime in the 70s. I'm sitting at home, and the phone rings, and I pick it up, and it's the voice in the other says, "Hello, this is Pete Seeger." Well, it turns out that Pete Seeger sang a song called "Garbage."
Oh yes, of course.
Bill Steele, and I had written an extra verse to it, and he's calling me to ask my permission to sing that extra verse. Well, I don't know, Pete. I'll have to get my lawyers, and we'll talk. I'll have my people talk to you. Of course, you can. He says, "Well, actually, I've rewritten what you wrote, and if you'll pause the tape for a second, I want to find the actual quotes because it's really interesting."
Oh, I thought you were going to play the phone message, but it was live.
Oh, no.
Yeah, no. Okay.
Hang on.
Sure. Oh, okay.
Find it on my it's in my blog somewhere. So I gotta go.
Check your blog. He's checking the blog, by the way, at mikeagronoff.com, AGRANOFF, Mike Agronoff here with me, Rabbi Sol Solomon, on the Dave's Gone By radio program of the air. How you doing there, Mike?
Hang on.
Okay, we're still hanging.
Pause the tape for a bit while I find this.
Pause the tape. We can tell what generation you're from. Okay.
Yeah, well, we still call them records, don't we? We still call them albums, albums used to be a bunch of 78s in a sleeve that looked like a photo album.
Yes, I wanted to talk to you about that, too, about the change, even since you've been a performer, in the way music is produced and distributed.
I don't multitask. Let me find
it. Okay, find your thing, find the blog. Die, die, da, da, die, 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 die,
die, die, die, die, die, die, die, die,
die, die, die, die,
die, die, die, die, die,
die, die, die, die, die,
die, die, was as follows. In Mr. Thompson's factory, they're making plastic Christmas trees. I'll sing it. In Mr. Thompson's factory, they're making plastic Christmas trees complete with silver tinsel and an artificial stand. The plastic's mixed in giant vats from some conglomeration that's been piped from deep within the ground or strip mined from the land. The residue gets flushed away through pipes beneath the ground, gets dumped into the river and fills up Long Island Sound. Garbage, 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 guys. We're killing off the fish with garbage. Garbage, 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 garbage. What will we do when there's nothing left to catch and there's no place left to swim and there's nothing left to drink but garbage? So this is a verse that sort of follows the kind of lighthearted poke in the ribs that Bill Steele's original song.
Okay.
Well, this is what Pete turned it into. In Mr. Thompson's factory, they're making plastic Christmas trees complete with silver tinsel and a geodesic stand. The plastics mixed in giant vats from some conglomeration that's been piped from deep within the ground or strip mined from the land. So far, just the same thing.
Right.
And if they ask you questions, they say, why don't you see? It's absolutely needed for the economy. Garbage, 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 garbage. Their stocks and their bonds, all garbage. Garbage, garbage, garbage. What will they do when their system's gone to smash? There's no value to their cash. There's no money to be made, but there's a world to be repaid. The kids will read in history about history books about financiers and other crooks and feudalism and slavery and nukes and all their knavery. To history's dustbin there consigned, along with many other kinds of garbage, which is a pretty angry polemic against the system. And that's not what I felt.
Oh, well, I don't know. It's interesting. I think your lyrics were a little more subtle and
certainly less radical and certainly less rabble-rousing.
Well, did you allow him to change your lyrics?
So what I did was I said, fine, sing the song, just don't give my name as associated with it. And that's what happened.
Well, wait a minute. Well, actually, I like the nukes and knavery. That's a really good.
It's not a sentiment that I fully agree with.
Now, wait a minute. You're not angry about companies that spew poison into the ocean?
I am indeed, but it's more the feel and the approach that bothers me. I am not. I'm a very apolitical person. In my performance, I very rarely touch on social matters. I just don't feel like I want to do that. That's not my purpose. My purpose is to entertain people, not to save the world.
No, I thought all folk singers were left wing hippies.
And I do appreciate and recognize and celebrate the things that Pete accomplished by his attitude. Just that I'm not that kind of a person.
Wow, interesting. It's just funny because it shouldn't be a controversial issue. It's not like taking a stand on something that's really, it's just taking a stand on not polluting, you know.
But the point is, I'll take my stand privately.
All right.
I won't take my stand on stage.
Okay.
That's not what I'm on stage for.
Well, do you take a stand on, say, Beethoven versus Mozart?
No, I like them both.
Okay, that's fair.
Not a versus, it's an and.
That's all right. Let me ask you, what are two or three songs that changed your life?
Well, I remember one that, I don't know if it changed my life, but it certainly changed my music. There's a French guitarist by the name of Pierre Bensouzon, who was a very early advocate of an alternative tuning on the guitar, the dadgad tuning. And when I heard him play, he just blew me away. And I started doing stuff in that tuning and changing a whole lot of the way I approached the guitar. That was one. Songs that changed my life.
At any age. Could have been when you were a kid, could have been...
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm trying to... I'll tell you another one.
Sure.
I don't know if it changed my life, but it marked a delineation point in at least my view of history. And that was Ohio, Four Dead in Ohio.
Oh, the Neil Young.
Yeah.
Crosby, Stills, Nash, Young. Okay.
I was working at the time in a company called Singer Kierfot that made inertial navigation systems.
Oh, of course, yeah.
And
I do that in my spare time.
Engineer, yeah. This is my early one. And I was in a small group of 20-somethings amongst a large company of 40- and 50-year-olds. And when that song came out, one of the most adamant right-wing co-workers came to me and said, "I don't know why we're doing this. I don't know why we're doing this." And that, well, because he was, we were busy making systems for missiles.
That's a hell of a story.
Yeah.
And it's funny.
And so it changed, and his reaction then changed my my feelings. I refused assignment of a particular to work on a particular project at that company that was for offensive missiles, and I was laid off shortly thereafter and went into work in the private sector.
It's so funny. I mean, it's a mind-blowing contradiction to what you were saying like 5 minutes ago.
No, it isn't,
because it was her private.
I'm saying that I don't do it from the stage.
Yeah. No, but a lot of other people, like a Billy Bragg, would have gone through that moment and then become an angry political songwriter. Tracy Chapman might have. By the way, let me ask you about this. When you were probably first coming into the ranks during that what they called sort of a renaissance, when Suzanne Vega came through, and Tracy Chapman, did you at one point think you could be part of that? Were you in that at all?
Well, I certainly hung around the village at the time. It's funny because I was of the right age and the right location to hang around the village in the 60s, because I grew up in New York City, and I just I could have been down there when Bob Dylan and Tom Paxton and all the rest of them were playing the little clubs, and I just wasn't.
You like New
there.
Jersey?
I wasn't. My experience of the folk music was in the radio, and I just never went down there during that time. I did go. Go down to the village when by that time I was living in New Jersey. And I did go down to the village in the fast folk scene when Suzanne Vega and John Gorka and Jack
Tracy
Hardy were the big players there. And I forgot where we started this conversation. How did we get?
Well, I was just saying, at that, did you try and be part of that second wave?
Yeah, I played at the Speakeasy. I did a couple of little sets and never, didn't manage to
get. You didn't have the breakthrough that per se that they did in the pop realm.
That was a sort of an odd time of year. I'm not sure how many people are particularly out in the West are familiar with the fast folk scene. It was essentially a holdover from the heyday of what we laughingly call the Great Folk Scare, and it continued for a good 15 years, well into the early 80s before it finally sort of petered out. And there were a whole bunch of singer-songwriters that weren't what you would call of the folk style of the of the early years of the folk music. I mean, the stuff they were writing were all personal stories as opposed to more universal themes.
It was post Dylan, post Joni Mitchell, James Taylor songwriter
was,
era.
Suzanne Vega. It was Tracy Chapman. It was John Gorka,
right.
and they were the ones that kind of come to mind immediately. And they were there were its stars, and it had less of an appeal to me than the earlier stuff.
Hmm.
The other thing was that I was also from the outset of my playing guitar, I came to folk music as more of a participatory than a performance oriented music. From the very beginning, I belonged to various folk music clubs. Firstly, the Folk Music Society of Northern New Jersey, which is no more, and then to the Folk Project, which was a group that of about 550 members, of which I'd say about 150 or 200 are musicians of one sort or another, not necessarily those that would go on stage, but would gather together and do music as a social activity. And as a matter of fact, that's one of the things that sort of formed the basis of my guitar playing, sitting around with people and playing songs together, which is a concept, I mean, and not for fame, not for recording, not for performance, but for the sheer enjoyment of playing music. And this is a concept that is
much
lost on modern America. It used to be
not necessarily. I mean, if you think about it, in a way, there are people who go on YouTube to do a cover version of a song.
Not playing with other musicians.
Oh, I see.
Just to sit there with other people and play and sing together and sing harmonies and play leads and do it for fun.
Mm.
And just for the sake of the music. This is something that was part of American life and part of most societies before the advent of mass media.
Well, families would sit around the piano.
Or around the porch and play music.
Or around the Guitar Hero.
The John Philip Sousa John Philip Sousa had, I saw a quote from him, something to the effect that the advent of the gramophone will sound the death knell of making music in the home. And he wasn't far off.
There's also people who said that radio would kill live theater. Didn't quite.
It sure as hell diminished it.
Well, all right, yeah, that's fair.
Sure as hell diminished it. Every town had a theater. Now, you know, they're struggling, and and there are some forms of entertainment that have... that really don't translate well without the personal touch. Storytelling for adults.
Mm.
Storytelling for adults is almost gone and lost as an art. People like Will Rogers, people like Mark Twain. Mark Twain would make national tours of live performances of storytelling.
Well, I mean, that's what comedians do, in a sense.
It is, in a sense, but it's very, very different. I mean, the stand-up comedy scene is very, very different from the raconteurs, the storytellers.
Okay, I guess. Although Katy Perry has a nice raconteur if you go see her. But you know, that's just a little comedy right there. Speaking of storytelling, one of the ways that people might know Mike Agronoff is from hearing on the old Pete Fornatel radio program, Mixed Bag, back on WFUV, and then also even a lot of radio people really appreciate your Sandman story that we'll be playing. But how did that come up? What made you write that, besides a love of what radio used to be?
Well, it's a story told in rhyme. It's recitation. It's stuff that Kipling would do. It's stuff that, well, certainly Robert Service is the most well-known in America of that style.
Or even The Night Before Christmas is the same style. I mean, that's...
Yeah, or Casey at the Bat.
Right.
Or, you know, that kind of thing. But it's a form of entertainment called recitation that in the days of vaudeville, in the days of the English music hall, was right up there with music and dancing and juggling and magic and comedy troupes. It was a vital, living, and much respected art form. It is just pretty much fallen by the wayside now. And I had learned one that that was written by Shel Silverstein called The Great Smoke-Off.
Oh, yes. They play that on Dr. Demento all the time, yes.
Uh-huh. And I'll give you the first four lines, which will give you the sense of it. In the laid-back California town of sunny San Rafael lives a girl named Pearly Sweetcake. You probably knew her well. She'd been stoned 15 of her 18 years, and the tale was widely told how she could smoke them faster than anyone could roll. And it goes on. But so I had learned this in my early 20s, and I performed it. And then I decided I wanted to write some of my own. And Sandman was the second one I wrote. There's another one called the Ballad of Jake and Ten Ton Molly, which is on my second CD, Or Would You Rather Get a Job? And that one, it's become kind of a signature piece to me. I don't know that I should do it here. It's long.
Right, well, we'll try and play it actually on the...
Play Sandman. That's even longer. That's about 13 minutes.
Right, and Sandman is also about the radio, so it's a lovely, and it's about what radio could have been was for a while. It's not a true story, but it's based on a couple of composites.
There's people who think it's true. I mean, not think it, but believe it when I tell it.
When you play, yeah, exactly. You make it like it's true, and it should have been true, even if it wasn't.
It probably was not technically possible, that daisy chaining of the signal from one station to the other would have lost fidelity by the time they got to the third generation. But anyway, you'll see it when you'll see it when you hear it.
But what we would like to do is have maybe one more live song here from Mike Agronoff. We want to remind everybody that you can buy all of his CDs, including the latest one, Straight Lines, at MikeAgronoff.com, AGRANOFF, MikeAgronoff.com. Also reminding everybody, you can see him live on January 23rd, Saturday night, at a house concert in Seaford, Long Island. For more information about that, songbox@optonline.net is the email address for tickets. There's also the information on the website with all your gigs, as well as that January 17th concert you're doing that people can stream from wherever, if you can't get to Long Island, if you're in Israel, perhaps. But do you have one more song to take us out of this lovely and delightful interview, Mike Agronoff?
Okay, this is a little Irish song bit written by Michael Smith, but I will precede it with a little Irish joke. So Sean is into his third Guinness, and the door of the pub opens up, and this little green fellow, about 4 feet high, bursts in, does a little step dance, does two handsprings up onto the bar, does three cartwheels along the bar, lands right in front of Sean, sticks his head in Sean's beer, goes, and runs away. And Sean is displeased with this turn of events, so he levers himself off the bar stool, chases the little fellow down the corner, grabs him by the scruff of the neck, says, look, you can't be doing this. You can't be just bursting in here, sticking your head in somebody's beer and going, oh, yes, I can, yes, I can, yes, I can, because I'm a leprechaun, and we can do whatever it is we like. Leprechaun says, no. Well, that's his maybe. But I never if you do that again, I'm going to take you by a little green belt, pull down your little green trousers, grab you by a little green weenie, swing you around the head three times, and pitch you right out that door, or I am. No, you can't. No, you can't. No, you can't. Because leprechauns don't have weenies. Oh? Leprechauns don't have weenies? Oh. How on earth then do you pee? Oh, simple. We go... One day a beautiful princess was walking through the bog, when whom should she meet on a slab of peat but Fred the Talking Frog. Well, the top of the morning to you, miss, hello, hello, cries he, I'd be glad you know if you'd stop a mow and listen close to me, because I've been bewitched and I'm needing a royal miss such as your lovely self to give this ugly mug a kiss. Such a metamorphosis will then ensue, I'll tell you true, And I'll turn back to a handsome prince and straightway marry you. To be rightful, rightful Johnny Goderum, higglety, pigglety, down and around. To be high-low, harem and scarum, riding a white horse, the cranberry clown. To be toady, toady, Truman Capote, driving to Sligo and Valley O'Shaden, to dance by the sea with a right cup of tea on a bleary Sunday morning. All together now. Yeah, yeah, says the princess, they are right, and that's all fine. But if it's a kiss you're after, I fear you'll have to stand in line. There's frogs outside me father's castle, frogs all in the royal hall. Frogs is climbing up the chimney, frogs is bouncing off the wall. Frogs is floating in the moat and up the stairs and on the shelf. If I kissed every one of you, Jesus, I'd have no time left to meself. So laddie, let's make it swift, for lately grows the hour, and I'm due home for me evening shift, to pining away all in the tower. To be rightful, rightful Johnny Goderum, higglety, pigglety, down and around. To be high-low, harem and scarum, riding a white horse to cranberry town. To be toady, toady, Truman Capote, Faith and Bagora, it's Maureen O'Hara, driving to Sligo with Molly O'Shafer, to dance by the sea with a right cup of Deanna Bleary Sunday morning. Well, she's about to kiss him when Mrs. Frog comes hopping by, saying, Fred, you're late for dinner. Coming here, was his reply. You mean he's not bewitched? The princess says. Just odd, says Mrs. Frog. And into kissing princesses he meets upon the bog. And though I love me, Fred, I fear he chafes at family ties. I'd invite you in for dinner, me dear, but we only have two flies. Thank God you didn't kiss him. Today's your lucky day. When I kiss Fred, I was a princess too. That's how I got this way. To be rightful, rightful Johnny Goderum, higglety, pigglety, down and around. To be high-low, harem and scarum, riding a white horse to cranberry town. To be toady, toady, Truman Capote, Faith and Bagora, it's Maureen O'Hara. Hark to the herald, it's Barry Fitzgerald, all driving to Sligo with Molly O'Shaper, to dance by the sea with a right cup of tea and a bleary Sunday morning. To be toady, toady, Truman Capote, Faith and Bagora, it's Maureen O'Hara. Hark to the herald, it's Barry Fitzgerald, all in a Volkswagen with Victor McLaughlin, driving to Sligo with Molly O'Shaper, to dance by the sea with a right cup of tea on a bleary Sunday morning. But to dance by the sea on an LSD Timothy Leary Sunday morning.
Faith and Begotta, my friends, Mike Agronoff, the song-finding, delightful, multi-talented, multi-instrumental atheist, my friend. Such a delight to have you in the neighborhood, singing your songs, telling your stories. Much continued success and health and music to you. We thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks very much.
Shalom to you.
Shalom.